is the Tactical Nutrition and Performance Podcast. I'm Susan Lopez, Tactical Dietitian, and I am here to help you elevate your performance through better nutrition programming, bridging the gap between knowledge and application to help support the athlete with no off-season. We are going to talk about everything from macros to stress to sleep and more. I will be bringing over a decade of nutrition know-how and experience and introducing you to experts in the tactical performance realm. If you are ready to take your health and performance to the next level and you need information that is relevant and right for you, then you are in the right place. Let's get the show started. All right. Good morning. So I'm super excited today because we have Stu Smith on the podcast today, somebody I've been a big fan of for almost a decade now. Been following you for a long time. When my spouse was actually getting ready to prepare to go into the military and into special operations, you were kind of our first introduction into strength and conditioning from someone who had actually worked, lived, and sort of breathed the tactical lifestyle. So really an integral part, I feel like, of his journey to where he is now. So again, I'm super honored to have you here and talk a little bit about some of the different topics around strength and conditioning. So what I'd like to do is, if it's okay with you, I'm just going to let you kind of give a small introduction to who you are, what you do, and then okay, we'll go from there. Does that sound good?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me on. And I am equally honored to be a part of anybody's journey into serving, whether that is the initial ramp into just getting prepared for your boot camp, or it's a little more advanced and getting ready for special ops type programming, whatever that is, I'm honored to be a part of it. So thank you for having me. I wanted to serve. I knew I wanted to serve in a very young age. I just didn't know how, in what method. All of my family was Army. So I have career Army, grandfather, World War II. I have another grandfather who was in World War II, and Patton's Third Army. He was only in for 4 years, but saw 11 battles in 11 months. And I mean, so I heard all these stories, so I knew I wanted to serve. My dad was, when I was a little baby, he was drafted in Vietnam in the Army. So it's always been a part of my family. And, as a young high school kid growing up in a small town, all we really had to do, a little town called Live Oak, Florida, all we really had to do was play sports or get in trouble. So I focused on playing sports. I played sports every season that there was a sport. I played something, and my goal was just to, I wasn't necessarily a gifted athlete, so I knew I needed to start training in order to kind of ramp it up and to be able to make the team. So I started lifting weights and training and doing sprints and agilities, when I was 12, 13 years old. And it was fun. I was lucky to have some older kids in the neighborhood, back then, this is the 80s. So, early 80s. So it was Arnold Schwarzenegger books and, those Joe Weider. I think I probably did Weider books for half a decade. And then we finally, when I got into high school, we actually had some coaches there that were more powerlifting coaches. We actually had a powerlifting team. And so I was kind of more drawn towards the strength and power side of the athletic spectrum. Played football, wanted to play football in college, also wanted to serve. And I found a way I could probably do both. And that was work really hard in school and got accepted into the Naval Academy. Considered West Point because, all my Army family, but wound up, being the rebel and going Navy. and got into the Naval Academy. You know, my goal was to be a fighter pilot and to play Navy football when I was 18 years old. And I did neither of those. I was humbled my first year of the Naval Academy. I was pretty much a standout high school student, but when I got to the Naval Academy, I was really nobody and just borderline failing to get through there. I was really close to not making it, but you know, figured out a way to do it. Had some good mentors along my way. I didn't make the football team. You know, is a list of failures. Failed my first fitness test I ever took in the military, which was sit-ups. I think I had to get 65 in 2 minutes, and I wound up getting 63. So I failed. That's it. I maxed the second one though. Learned how to do it. Some mentors helped me out. You know, so it was not necessarily a smooth journey, and I wound up finding a home on the rugby field with some very great upperclassmen that were highly motivated. They were going Marines. They were becoming SEALs. You know, they wanted to do EOD, Marine pilot. You know, all these guys were really squared away. And I saw what they did in order to make it through the training. And that's where I kind of came up with my philosophy of you got to get to the training in order to get through the training. Mm-hmm. And I did really well getting to the Naval Academy, right? I did horribly. Took me a good year and a half to figure out how to get through the Naval Academy, mm-hmm. right? As if I would have been smarter, I would have done a little more research on things I needed to prepare myself for to get through the academy and things like that. So that is kind of from a deep lesson learned of a bunch of failures. One of my coaching things that I really try to help people with is that journey of being a high school kid wanting to serve or a college kid wanting to serve, and they got to pass a fitness test to get to a certain level of fitness in order to be accepted into a military branch of service. But then they also need to prepare for what's next while they are still a civilian, because, you know, boot camp doesn't necessarily do it, mm-hmm. especially if you're trying to go for Rangers like your husband or, trying to do another special ops job. You know, there's nothing in the boot camp basic training program that is going to prepare you for that level of fitness. So you really have to do it yourself. And that is, I write about that because it was so impactful in my journey. That I saw a lot of people fail at that. And I was almost one of them, you know, and when I got to SEAL training, you know, after I finished the academy, I went into SEAL training. That was in 1991. When I went into SEAL training, you know, the first 4 weeks we lost, I don't know, 70% of the people that were there in day one, you know, which is a typical attrition rate, but most of those people, once again, only prepared themselves to get to that training. They never really thought about the events, the specific events of what they need to endure when they get there and to be successful. So I saw a need, I guess you could say. I saw a need in the tactical fitness population. And when I was writing about it at first, there was the term tactical fitness didn't exist. I used to call it military law enforcement and firefighter fitness. And that didn't really roll off the tongue very well, but that's what I did. I was kind of like that guy in the late 90s because I served from 91 until 99. I got out in 99, and it was a series of reasons for making that transition. Had our first child. It was the 90s. Not a whole lot was going on. You know, 2 years later, obviously, the world changed. You know, when I was in, you could spend 20 years in the military and never see combat action. You know, there were people retiring that I saw throughout my time in the military. You know, just they weren't there when things were happening, whether it was the Gulf War or Panama or Grenada. You know, there were few and far between events that, you know, people were actually doing their job. Plus, you know, there was no tactical fitness programming in the 90s either. So when I show up to my SEAL team, my high school strength and conditioning program and weightlifting facilities were better than my SEAL team weightlifting facilities. And there were no coaches, right? It was the most fit guy at the team was going to run PT for the day. And it was random. And it was kick yourself hard. And I was broken at age 30, to be quite honest with you. I'd had every injury that I could think of, from sprained ankles to I needed surgery on my ankles, stress fracture in my femur, lower back, hip injury, shoulder separation. So it just, everything was falling apart by age 29. And just combine that with everything else, you know, I just thought it was a good time to get out. And I did. And I, once again, I was a decent writer. You know, I grew up, my dad's a newspaper journalist. My mom's an English teacher. So I always had, felt like I always had a set of eyes or two looking at everything I turned in. So they were very helpful with me learning how to write. So I knew I wanted to write. I just didn't know what I wanted to write about. And then I got to thinking about, you know, the to and through process that I had endured a decade earlier. I was like, maybe there's something there, focusing on, you know, before people are serving, how can they be better prepared? So when they get to that boot camp or police academy or fire academy, that they don't break or they fail to meet the standards, because there really was nothing out there, you know, for that audience. And that's where I started. I started focusing on working out and writing about it on that level of basically passing a fitness test in order to be accepted into these trainings, and then to create a follow-on specific programming for those tasks that that person is going to see in their future. So that's my journey to almost 20 years ago. So things have evolved in over 20 years since I've started, but that is how I transitioned from a high school athlete into a tactical athlete into writing about tactical fitness.
And really, the tactical space has changed so much, even just in the last, you know, 5, maybe even 10 years, I would say, with, you know, 4-3 program coming up through special operations. Now, if you go into facilities on special operations compounds, those are some of the most high tech, well-equipped facilities that you're going to see, many of them rivaling some college, and I would even argue professional sports training facilities. I know I've seen a couple pretty nice ones myself. So I think
it's night and day. It is night and day from what I saw. I mean, I think we had such old Nautilus equipment in our weight room, you know, back in 91, 92. You know, it was bad. You had some free weights, but most of it was machines.
Yeah. And now the focus really is on more of like the free weights, right? You see platforms, I mean, different companies, I think like Sorinex I've seen.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a totally night and day. I would say that, you know, it's my journey obviously wasn't the same as yours, but kind of the same situation where, you know, I left home right after high school to join the military, had no idea what I was going to do, ended up actually being a military cook. And then transitioned into the nutrition care specialist role, which is just sort of a glorified military cook that can work inside of a hospital.
that's a good skill.
It is. That's where, that's actually where I learned how to cook. Yeah. That's actually where I learned how to cook. my very first week during like the baking section of military cooking school, I actually destroyed a sheet pan trying to make chocolate chip cookies. So yeah, that was my first experience there. But ended up working under some really phenomenal dietitians. And that's really kind of what led me into what I'm doing now. And so it just, same thing, kind of like life experience, you know, just finding that passion and then just carrying it forward into where I'm at now. So.
Yeah, that's a great transition as well. You know, yeah. You know, military does offer some great skills and education and, you know, experiences that you can take with you into these journeys. You just have to kind of keep your mind open and just get moving once you get out. That's a hard one for people sometimes, making that transition.
Yeah. Or even just having like some idea of what's going to happen, you know, when you do get out. I see that a lot too, is where some of these young guys, they'll want to leave the military expecting kind of the grass to be greener on the other side. But they don't always have a plan for, you know, optimizing all of the resources that the military actually does provide you. You know, for instance, now with strength and conditioning coaches, dietitians, all of those things that are being made available to conventional forces, you know, utilizing them, tuition assistance, college, all kinds of things, right? We could probably go off on a tangent on all.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That could be a whole separate podcast.
Absolutely. It's important though. You know, it is important, especially, you know, you're a young person, you're thinking about getting into the fitness business. You know, that it's a big business, and where I see a lot of people make mistakes going into fitness, and that doesn't last long, is they don't really get into a specific niche. Mm-hmm. And they're a little too broad, and they tend to kind of peter out a little without being able to focus on a particular activity.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So I actually, tactical dietitian, as it is now, has only been around for a few years. But I've been working on my online coaching business for probably the better part of 6 years.
Nice.
At least. And when, you know, I just had that flip switch one day where I was kind of like, oh, I'll take anybody. You know, I just do nutrition, very broad, right? And I was having a conversation with my husband one day, and he was like, I don't understand why you don't just work with tactical populations, military, police, fire. I mean, that's where you come from. That's what you love. That's who you enjoy working with. And it was just kind of that click moment. And as soon as that happened and I started focusing there, I realized that that's really where my comfort level was. Just, you know, I spoke their language. I understood the needs of the population. As soon as that all clicked, I mean, everything just fell into place. And I was really fortunate that I had kind of that aha moment. But it took a while to get there.
Oh, yeah. Same here. Yeah. Same here. I realized that, you know, I have an interesting story. My last year of being in the military, I went back to the Naval Academy as an instructor. And I was a company officer, so I was in charge of like 140 MIDs, but I also ran the SEAL program. But as a collateral duty, they would pull me out of some of these things when I had time, and I'd work with the remedial folks because nobody on the academy wanted to work with the people that were failing the swim and failing the run and failing the PT test. But I did, you know, and I really enjoyed that, and I found a lot more satisfaction out of getting someone to pass those standards, whether it was a minimum or close to a minimum standard or not. They were still able to stay there, and they're able to finish their degree and finish their, you know, their 4 years at the academy. And, you know, seeing some of those people now, you know, 30 years later, it's still touching whenever they remember me helping them do that. Like the guy that wants to be a SEAL, you know, me helping him go from 10 pull-ups to 20 pull-ups, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, that's fun. You know, I like working with advanced athletes and things like that. But it's the ones where you can create a lifestyle change for them that have the most meaning for me anyway. Yeah,
100%. And you're changing the trajectory of somebody's life at that point, right? Because the guys who are kind of like in that middle to higher performance zone, they're probably going to make it, you know, just based on their physical fitness level, maybe, right? There could be some other barriers that hold them back. But when you're working with someone who wants it, but is really struggling, I mean, you're completely changing their life 100%. That happens even in the nutrition realm. And we might talk about this later on, but I've had definitely athletes come to me who don't realize that what they're doing with their nutrition is affecting not only their physical performance, but also their motivation level, their desire to train, right? Low energy availability can have a huge impact on your cognitive status, on your mental health. I've had people come to me and tell me that they're thinking of leaving the military because they're struggling with physical performance, weight, mental health issues. And this is actually something that happened recently. In as little as 30 days, just by getting someone to actually have enough energy available through nutrition to actually start feeling it better, they re-enlisted. Completely different attitude. Their spouse even told them that they seem happier, more confident.
That's incredible. I mean, and you're so right. You know, if I were in the military, put it this way, in the 90s, I wish we had people like you that were telling us what to eat and what to drink. And we had people like the world-class strength and conditioning coaches that are in these world-class facilities now. You know, I would have given anything to be able to go to a gym that nice and say, yeah, I just want to stay operational. What should I do? Right. And just get a great program to go with versus getting beat down every single day, you know, on concrete flooring.
Yeah. And the mental health aspect of having the right training program along with the right nutrition. I mean, that's huge because that's a big issue, right? We're not going to go into that today again, because again, that could be a whole other conversation.
Sure.
But just on the ground level, when you see somebody's mindset shift like that, because their training and their nutrition is just clicking for them, I mean, that's one of the greatest rewards that you can have, right? And then to speak to that person later down the road, I always tell my people that the greatest compliment I could ever get is probably for you to come back and tell me that, and then to go spread the message amongst the masses that, hey, this actually works. So-and-so told me that I should do this because they talked to you and I feel like a whole new person. That's probably one of the best compliments.
Oh, 100%.
I can probably get.
Absolutely.
And now, I'm going to kind of transition a little bit, right? So one of the other issues kind of coming up now that tactical is becoming such a popular niche, right? As we called it earlier, now we're seeing a lot of tactical strength and conditioning coaches, programs, right? We're seeing all of these prep programs pop up, weekend seminars, all of these kinds of things, right? And some of them are great. Some of them are not so great, right? So I want to ask you, kind of as the subject matter expert, when we're looking at training programs, physical training programs, what for you would you say are maybe some red flags when it comes to figuring out if a training program is going to be beneficial or detrimental? What are some red flags for you?
Oh, great question. You know, I just realized this past year, I've been training now for 40 years. You know, since I was 12, 13 years old, I'm 53 now.
Durability.
Yeah. And I mean, my first 20, I would say, were pretty stupid, right? My first 20 years were pretty stupid. You know, that. You know, I think that was one of the benefits of being young, you know, being a teenager, early 20s, you could probably get away with stupid workouts as long as you don't get injured and actually see some progress. Probably won't see optimal results, but you'll see progress. But I would say this, you know, there's a lot of programming out there that is really focused on yeah, they're training physically, but there's also an element of this mental toughness that they're adding into their training. You know, and I've always said, first of all, I have a way to train, not the only way to train. So I'm not saying this like I have a monopoly on the way to train. You know, there's many other ways to train. I have one of them that works.
I feel like we should repeat that, because sometimes I see people on Instagram being like, well, I use so-and-so's program and it works for me. And, you know, so-and-so trains this way and I think this is better. And I just want to let the masses know out there, there is not just one method that works. Right? We have to take into consideration where you're at in your career and your individual goals and fitness level, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I wear this shirt because of that. It depends.
Yes, I love it.
It really depends on the individual. And one of the things I tell people when people say, hey, I'm doing this program, what do you think? I'm like, you know what? Try it and see if it works. That's the best way to do it, and see if you see the results. You know, maybe give it a 4 to 6 week, you know, cycle and see what you think of it. Because you won't know unless you try it. That is a typical answer I give. And then, you know, if they're seeing results, great. If they're not seeing results, maybe kind of guide them towards another direction. One thing that I like to recommend people to do is choose a program that's going to specifically help them with their weakness that they have, that's inherent in all of us. We all have a certain weakness coming into this world, with no matter what level athlete you are. In fact, probably the greater athlete you are, the more of a equal and opposite weakness you may have, right? For instance, like the endurance athlete is probably going to be weak in the strength and power numbers. You know, may not even have much agility either, because they're just either swimming or they're running straight for long, slow distances. It really kind of depends on that athlete and individually. The other thing that I was getting to about the mental toughness side is that, you know, this is one's really important, because if you're trying to do a workout and push your limits to the point of making you more mentally tough, there is always a fine line between mental toughness and stupidity, right? And you can push real hard and push those perceived limitations all you want until you can't anymore and you're injured. That's when it goes into stupid. So if you're doing a workout routine, or your workout routine that you're making for yourself leads you to more injuries than progress, then I would say that is a huge red flag. And you need to consider making a change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes I do see that where there's just and again, this is kind of your area, but overuse of really high intensity training, you know, just kind of random workouts, just getting your butt kicked just for the sake of getting your butt kicked, right? That's kind of what we're talking about.
I'll even say, you know, my workouts that I have, you know, once again, I have generic workout programs. Now, these generic workout programs may be perfect for you. However, there may be elements in that week that you have to pull back on and do a little less, maybe total volume of running than I have written in there. Or you may have to do more, depending on your running abilities, or you may have to do less calisthenics because you can't do pull-ups. You know, 100 pull-ups in a workout would kill you. You know, you probably really have to adjust, you know, a lot of these things on your own. So anytime you get a generic workout program, the individual has to personalize that for their current abilities. Otherwise, it's really possible for them to go over that line of the mental tough stupidity side and just overwork themselves to a point of where, one, they're injured, or two, they're just stuck on this plateau because they're never able to recover from that kind of volume increase too soon.
Yeah. And it's the same on the nutrition side, right? So, you know, we talk about, you know, macros and meal plans and that kind of thing, right? But those are meant to be guidelines. And it's really kind of like the self-assessment piece, right? Am I recovering? How's my sleep? What are my hunger levels looking like? Am I actually making progress during my programming? What's my energy like during my training, right? And that's how we kind of understand how to move those different things up and down the spectrum. So, right, you start with kind of like the general guideline and then you move things around based on your individual response.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you just did there is what we all need to do. We need to ask ourselves those questions every single day. We need to write down, you know, the things we are eating and write down the things that we are doing and, you know, look at your improvements or, you know, when you don't improve, when you're just kind of stagnant or you're seeing negative results. You know, all of those things are great individual pieces of feedback that can take just a normal workout that you're doing and actually turn it into information that you can use on what's working for you and what's not working for you. I tell people all the time, you're just guessing if you're not assessing yourself and asking those questions. Because one thing that I have done several times with people and myself is when, let's say I had one of my best workouts ever and hit a couple of PRs in something and things were just like rolling for me. So one of the things I first do after that event, besides, you know, hydrate and eat up and, you know, get ready for the next workout with, you know, good nutrition, is to ask myself, what did I do these last 24 hours that led to that performance? How'd I sleep? How'd I eat? How'd I hydrate? You know, how did I, you know, was I on my feet all day? You know, was I kind of resting a little bit? You know, what was it that enabled me to have that PR day? Then you do the same thing on a bad day as well, right? You know, just because if you have a bad day, I'd like to know why I had a bad day, right? Was it from skipping that, you know, good meal and had McDonald's? Was it, you know, underhydrated? Did I have a bad night's sleep? You know, all those little things come into play into your performance. And the sooner you can realize that it is really just a balancing game of all of those, you know, physical stress that you're putting on your body and your ability to recover from it, those things have to be in balance. And when they're not in balance, that's when you're going to see those negative results.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of thinking about training, right? Nutrition, we talked a little bit about. One of the things that I want to kind of touch on today too is the transition for somebody who's training to get into the tactical space. So somebody who's not quite in the military yet or in law enforcement or whatever the case may be, they're sort of still in recruit mode. Transitioning from the type of training that might help you prepare for that, right? And then we kind of talked about, you know, in basic, sometimes there can, that's not really going to prepare you. So what the training looks like prior to, and then once maybe you've been operating in the tactical space for a little bit, how your training needs to change to support you career-wise once you're actually working in your chosen profession.
Well, great question. I break down tactical fitness into three phases. And first of all, the main answer is it depends. It depends on that person's athletic history, current fitness abilities, you know, timeline, you know, all of those things are really important to how you would prepare that individual. But first of all, phase one of tactical fitness is getting to the training. You know, all of these jobs require a fitness test, right? The more you can prepare yourself by actually doing the events of that fitness test, you know, the better. Now, your workouts don't have to be the test. You don't necessarily have to train like the test.
Can you say that louder, please?
Yeah, a lot of people hate that. Yeah, a lot of people hate that. Though, you know, it's never a bad idea to give yourself an assessment here and there. Every other week or so, take the test. You know, make that part of your workout just to see if you're making those strides that you need to be making to hit that, you know, those scores that you need to be having. Right. And are these scores that you're, then the other thing to ask is, are those scores that you're reaching, is that a complete gut check for you to reach that 7 minute mile? Or is a 7 minute mile an easy day for you and you could do a 6 minute mile if you really, you know, put out that day, right? Which a 7 minute mile is going to pass you, 6 minute mile is probably going to be above average, right? So there's just little things that there that you can, you know, check in, because what a lot of people do is they meet that standard. Here's where I see a lot of guys in phase one fail, is they're trained for the test. They pass the test. They meet that standard, but they don't meet it well enough to go focus on something else. They're still so borderline failure that, you know, any skipping of those events and not maintaining those events is going to lead to worse scores. I see it a lot of time with the Navy, because before you go into Navy SEAL program, you have to pass a swim test, push-ups, pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, a mile and a half run, PST, before boot camp. And then at boot camp, you may take it once while you're there just to stay in the program. It's very important to pass that one. And then, you know, you'll have to take, then you go to prep. And when you show up at prep, after really being deconditioned at a Navy boot camp, which unfortunately Navy boot camp will decondition you if you're going in there at that level. If you're going in at the typical American fitness level, right, you'll actually probably come out in better shape at the end of boot camp. But if you're going in at a very high level, trying to maintain, you know, excellent PST scores, you're going to decondition.
And so that that was kind of me, right? So I was like the standard American who came out of boot camp in better shape, right?
Well, the Army's different. You know, yeah. Were you in the Army?
I was in the Army.
Okay. Army's different. Army boot camp's not a joke like Navy boot camp.
Okay.
Right. Navy boot camp. I think the last time I heard the guys report back to me, they said they ran 8 miles. In like 8 weeks.
Oh no. Oh, that's like all week. That's like all week in Army boot camp.
Yeah. See, yeah. So anyway, they get out of shape. So they have to go. I tell my guys, go in so like way above the minimum standard. Mm-hmm. You got to be like crushing the advanced level. You know, if it's a 10:30 swim, you better be swimming sub 8. Right. Because you need that minute or two cushion just to be able to handle the deconditioning that's going to occur during boot camp. Now, there are some ways to, you know, squeeze in some extra training on your own, but it's difficult. So anyway, that's phase one. And that's where I see a lot of people mess up on phase one, getting to the training. Another thing is, if that's all they focused on before they went to boot camp, and then they never focused on phase two, which is getting through the next phase of that training, that next phase is going to be a rude awakening out of all the specific events that you missed out on, whether that is longer runs, longer rucks, longer swims, higher repetition PT events, obstacle courses, you know, all these little things that are going to challenge you specifically. If you can prepare yourself long before you go in for those events that you're going to see, you're going to be a lot better off, even with some deconditioning. And when you go into it really, really in great shape, you can actually use that deconditioning as somewhat of a taper, right? Before you go in, and then you go into prep and you go crush prep, and then you go crush that next selection course, whatever that is. So that's phase one and phase two. And then phase three is the active duty operator. You've gotten through all your training, your selections, your extra courses that you had to take to be that person you wanted to be. And now it's all, now you have a world-class system to help you maintain all of that, you know, which you have people like yourself, you know, that are, you know, nutritionists in the military, and you have, you know, strength trainers in the military, you know, so those are there to help you maintain all the standards that you need to maintain to do your job. That's number one. Pass a fitness test. Yeah, that's number two. But then the biggest ones really are just your ability to manage stress, you know, so it becomes a stress mitigation process, you know, when you're actively doing these jobs, because these jobs are stressful. You see things that are hard to see, and you have to learn how to deal with those properly and build some mental resilience so you can still continue to do your job, you know, for a long period of time, which is all about longevity, which nutrition is definitely a huge part in all of that. Sleep is a very important factor of that as well, and smart training. And I think where a lot of people screw up is they're so sympathetically charged with the stress of their job, then, you know, they're not eating right, they're not sleeping right, and then they're just doing butt-kicking workouts that just continue to, like, stress them out physically. You've just burnt the candle, like, on all three sides of that, you know, triangular cookie or triangular candle that you're just waiting to erupt and fall apart. And a lot of people break, whether that's injuries, it's mental injuries, or it's just pure burnout.
Yeah, absolutely. And from my perspective, like, some of the things that I'll see sort of on my end when an athlete gets there is, right, so the physical part, right? Not being able to suddenly build strength or, yep, you know, lift at the same intensity that they were just a few weeks ago. Sleep disruptions, appetite decreases. On a biochemical level, we see disruptions in thyroid hormones, blood sugar, testosterone levels, all of those things. So mitigating stress is huge. And right, and in the tactical community, especially somebody who's been operating, like you said, their lifestyle habits tend to deteriorate the longer they've been operating. True. Right. So sleep, I would argue, is foundational, in my opinion, to maintaining some of that balance, right? But that can be really difficult.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a non-scientific pie chart once just to kind of explain recovery to people. And I put half of the pie chart is sleep. The other 40% is nutrition. And then this missing 10% is where everybody spends their money on, right? Supplements, massage tools. Yeah, you name a recovery gadget, it's in that 10%. Whereas if you just focus on your sleep and your nutrition, you're going to be 90% of your recovery is taken care of.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I have a triangle and the foundation of that triangle is absolutely sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So super crucial. And I know that we were going to talk a little bit about some nutrition things as well too. We kind of wanted to get into that. Having some relevancy in what's going on in your life right now.
Yeah, I had a question for you. You know, flu season, I guess. I don't know what I have. I had some kind of virus earlier this week, affected my, basically my head, sinus virus, head cold or something maybe. But I have this laryngitis type thing going on right now. And I lost my voice 2 days ago. I was almost going to email you today and say, you know, it hurts to talk. I don't know what, you know, not sure if I'm going to make it today, but it felt a little better. I just laid off the talking for a couple of days. But anyway, I guess my question is, I wrote it down here too. It was focusing on just fighting colds and viruses. You know, is there any particular thing other than obviously eating a well-balanced, nutritious diet, you know, with foods? Is there anything that you do different, you know, when it is a cold and flu season. You're just trying to strengthen your immune system, things like that.
Yeah. Well, one, thanks for being a trooper and coming on today. But yeah, I mean, that, so right, general nutrition, lifestyle stuff is important. But understanding how the immune system sort of operates is really important too, right? So something that some people may not know is that the majority of your immune system is controlled and regulated by your gut, right? So when we talk about nutrition, you know, a lot of people, you know, it's not the sexy piece of performance or health, right? But everything that runs through your gut is going to impact the way that every cell in your body operates, every system in your body operates. So from a preventative standpoint, building your immunity, it is extremely important. Your foods that you're going to take in, you want these to be things that support your gut microbiome, right? So when we talk about gut microbiome, we're talking about probiotics. Sure. The healthy bugs that live in your gut. And there's a lot of research that's come out in the last, you know, 10, 15 years and whatnot, about how those bugs in your gut actually impact not only your immune system, but your brain as well. So your neurotransmitter production, serotonin, melatonin, right? Your sleep neurotransmitter. Nice. So understanding vitamin K production actually comes from those bugs in your gut as well. Folate is a big thing there as well. Folate being a B vitamin, right? All of that's going to impact your immune system. So when you're consuming foods that are overprocessed, high in sugar, low in fiber, the majority of the time, you actually change the types of bugs that live in your gut. You change the diversity inside of your gut, and that is all going to impact your immune system. So yes, general nutrition, healthful nutrition is good, but specifically what we're talking about is consuming foods that support that probiotic, those probiotics in your gut. So anything that's kind of fermented, right? Kimchi, sauerkraut, kombucha, kefir, all of those things, miso, are going to help increase the colonization of your gut. You actually have
How about
more-
yogurts?
Yeah.
Yogurts.
Yeah. Yogurt can be good, but only, but there are certain types that are better for okay. that. So specifically yogurts that are made to have a high number of probiotics in them, lactobacillus, bifidobacterium, streptococcus, those types of yogurts are going to be great. And there are some that are not. So there's a lot of commercial yogurts that are just pure sugar.
Right.
That's it. Just pure sugar. And you can see that by looking on the label, right?
And they taste really good.
They're desserts, right? We're not going to name names, right?
Right.
But you probably know which ones I'm talking about,
sure.
right? So
Absolutely.
When you look on the label, it's pure sugar, right? There are some yogurts on the market that have just as much sugar as soda. So let me just put that out right now.
Damn.
Those are the ones you want to avoid. Right.
So sure.
the ones that we're looking for that have a high amount of probiotics on them are always going to have that on the label. You'll see it in CFUs. You'll see the name of the probiotic bacteria that's in there. So that's what you want to look for on the label.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And working some of those in on a daily basis, right?
How about antioxidants? Are they helpful in this immune fight as well?
Absolutely. So when we're talking about antioxidants, we're talking about sort of those health promoting nutrients that are in your food outside of just the regular vitamins and minerals. So where you're going to find the most antioxidants is going to be in your plant-based foods, your colorful foods, right? Fruits,
Perfect.
Vegetables, that type of thing. Magnesium is fantastic for the immune system. Zinc, fantastic for the immune system. Magnesium is actually one of my non-negotiables when it comes to supplementation, just because most people tend to be extremely deficient. They don't know it. There's not a great way to test for it. That's consumer facing. If you don't know what to test for, the body does a really good job of trying to manage electrolyte balance. So magnesium, even though you can test magnesium, it's not always going to show up as deficient on your panel until it's very deficient. Mm. And your body can no longer regulate that.
Now, do you supplement magnesium, or are there particular foods that are just go-to foods for that will be sufficient?
Yeah, so nuts and seeds are great for magnesium. Some of your whole grains, you're definitely going to find it in some of your plant foods. But I typically always recommend additional supplementation, particularly for this population, because physically active people and people who are under a lot of chronic stress are going to need higher levels of magnesium.
Okay. So the recommended- How's that? Because it's more of a like an electrolyte, or is it just helpful with sleep?
So there's a lot. It plays a big role in thyroid function, energy production, energy availability, sleep, blood sugar regulation. I mean, okay. It's responsible for a lot. So it's kind of like protein, right? So and in the sense that people only associate protein with muscle, but protein is used in every single cell in your body and is necessary for strong bones as well, right? So everything in the body is kind of used for everything. Calcium, another one, right? We associate that with bone health a lot of times, but calcium is necessary for muscle contraction, right? So looking at the use of different things like magnesium in the body, it's not just for that. Magnesium can also play a big role in muscle cramping and spasms. So usually if somebody is experiencing severe cramping, severe muscle spasms without any other indication of what that could be, sometimes magnesium supplementation can actually assist with that.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So recommended dosage there, upper limit on taking in magnesium from the USDA is, the recommended daily allotment, upper limit on magnesium is 350 milligrams per day from supplementation. That's on top of any food that you might also be taking in that has magnesium in it. For okay. bone health and just good magnesium kind of numbers, usually you want to take it in a ratio of 2 to 1 calcium to magnesium. So if you're taking 1,000 milligrams of calcium in a day from food and supplementation, you should also be taking in a minimum of about 500 milligrams of magnesium as well. Gotcha. So that can be really immune supporting, the probiotics, along with that. And then of course, a diet that's high in fiber.
Okay.
We talk a lot about probiotics. We don't talk a lot about prebiotics. Prebiotics being the actual food that feeds the bacteria that lives in the gut, that feeds the probiotic. So any food that's high in fiber is going to be beneficial for that. Again, that's going to be your whole grains, your fruits and vegetables, right? Some of your fruits as well. So we want to feed that probiotic.
Are you for supplementing fiber?
Not really. So if we're talking about like some of those powders that you can get on the market, not typically. Yeah,
like a Metamucil type thing.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it because I really haven't like seen
them. One of these cookies, fibers.
I mean, they might taste good. Honestly, just eat prunes. Get some dry prunes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of powder fiber supplements just because I've not really seen them be effective in the real world. I just haven't, not in the doses maybe that sometimes people are taking. I tend to find if we can focus on increasing your fiber intake from food first, that's typically going to be more beneficial. So usually we will not use fiber supplementation. If somebody is just so impacted from like a constipation standpoint, there's some deeper issues going on there that we need to address. Metamucil is probably not going to get the job done if you're not having a bowel movement on a regular basis.
Right.
Just in my experience, it just doesn't work well.
Okay. So, how about hydration? How about hydration?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. How important, once again, with the immunity side. Yeah, especially in the winters, you know, whenever the air's dry in the winter, your heater's on in your house.
Just sucking all that moisture out of your body.
Absolutely. Yeah. it's arid in here. Right. Yeah. So, what is your recommendation on, just daily hydration?
Yeah. So definitely important, right? Body's 70-75% water. Everything that happens in your body happens in a water environment. Even your muscles are predominantly water, right? Yep. So what we want to do is general rule of thumb. There's a couple of different ways that you can look at it, right? There's no standard water intake that's going to be perfect for everybody. It depends. But general rule of thumb is you can do half your body weight in ounces plus whatever you lose in sweat. Smart. You can do a milliliter for every calorie that you take in, plus what you potentially lose through your sweat. General recommendations, again, are going to be 2 to 4 liters per day, plus whatever you lose in sweat, right? And then there's more specific recommendations for training and whatnot. One of the things that we want to do is we want to make sure that we always have a water source available, right? That makes it easy to drink if you always have something within arm's reach. This is an easy lifestyle change that can actually make it a lot easier for people to get their daily intake of water in, is just having that water source available. So you're probably like me. If you come into my house or my car or my office, there's water bottles everywhere. I actually have 2 Yetis sitting on my desk right now.
Hey, look at that.
Perfect. And then I have a 64-ounce thermos that I carry throughout the day when I'm at my job site, or if I'm in my vehicle, if I'm taking short trips, I have a small 1-liter bottle that I take with me. You will never find me without a water bottle in my hand, ever.
Absolutely. Anybody listening to that should really write that down, because it's so important, especially if you're going through these tactical jobs, tactical selection programs. You know, any of those things, you can be a failure just because you didn't drink enough water the day before.
Yeah.
You can be a heat casualty, yeah. And it just snowballs from there.
It does. And even I'll give you an example. So one of the things that I do in coaching is I work with a lot of military athletes who are prepping for Ranger school. So if you're familiar with Ranger school, it's a minimum of 9 weeks. The curriculum is 9 weeks. Doesn't mean you're only going to be there for 9 weeks, right? But it's just essentially just a kick in the butt, 9 weeks, right? High risk of injury, high risk of low energy availability, high risk of illness, right? Infections, even, you know, if you get a cut, you know, and you're in the mud, right? There's always risk of infection there. So the only thing that you have unlimited access to really during that time is going to be water and electrolyte support, and understanding how to use those appropriately in an environment like that to mitigate injury, performance, and then also just risk of infection and health is super important. So learn how to do that before you go to a training event in order to make sure that you're on track, right? Because that's going to affect your endurance as well. It's going to affect your decision-making process, all of that stuff. So always having that water available.
So not only would these, you know, help you prevent these type of illnesses, you know, help your immune system fight off, you know, the illnesses that are around us all times, will they also help you, like, while you're sick, to kind of help you, shorten that illness time?
Yeah. So your body's constantly creating metabolic waste. When you're sick, that metabolic waste can increase, right? You want to kind of flush out the system pretty regularly. You can't do that if you're not properly hydrated. And it can sometimes be difficult to want to drink water or even eat when you're sick. Yeah. So it's perfectly acceptable to flavor your water during that time. You know, if you want to put some electrolytes in it, right, to help with sort of that process, support the liver, support the kidneys during that time, then that's absolutely fine.
Right. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, that was my question that I posed to you before we started. I said, hey, while I have you on here, please help me answer this one, because I experienced illness this time, and I haven't been sick in a very long time. Yeah, yeah. I'm very lucky. I'm a pretty healthy guy. I think it probably was, I think I had bronchitis due to almost like a self-induced bronchitis when I was running in the allergens of, you know, the fall a couple of years ago, but that was, I wasn't even sick. It was just a raspy thing. But this is one of my first times I was actually caught a virus in probably 8 years. So
yeah, anyway. And I think that's probably a testament to your lifestyle, right? We're rarely sick in our household as well. So
yeah.
Preventative measures go a long way.
Yeah, but every now and then they sneak in on you.
Yeah. The only other thing I would probably add to that is I know like a lot of people like to use vitamin C when they're sick. And the only thing I would say there is, you know, when you're in a stressful situation, your body's undergoing stress, whether it be from illness, injury, or physical stress, right? So sometimes people who have a tendency to overtrain will experience a lot of illness as well. Yep. Whenever your stress is elevated in the body, it depletes vitamin C, right? Mm. So that's why a lot of times people will take it during illness. It's not necessarily going to make you feel better, but it can help sort of reestablish good vitamin C levels in the body as you're going through that illness.
Now, I watched your Instagram and I noticed you had an interesting post on vitamin D recently. How important is vitamin D to what we do?
Yeah, vitamin D is extremely important to, again, just like magnesium, everything in the body, but especially the immune system. Right. So there's been some research that's come out in the last year that's, you know, speculating that vitamin D plays a big role in COVID immunity. I'll have to see if I can find that article and I'll shoot it over to you. But bone health, there's also some research indicating that vitamin D acts as not only a vitamin in the body, but a neurotransmitter and also sort of a gene, inhibitor or, you know, something that can really impact your risk of disease and even certain types of cancers in the event that you're extremely deficient in vitamin D, right? Yeah. Vitamin D, you have to be careful though, because it's a fat soluble vitamin. So just to give you an example, I've had a couple of my athletes who are taking vitamin D supplementation who came to find out that they were taking mega doses of vitamin D supplementation.
Okay.
So a mega dose is anything over 2000 IUs per day. Okay. The recommended amount that you should be taking in is between about 1800 and 2000 IUs per day. Anything over that without lab testing, you want to be careful of, because if you build up too much vitamin D in the body, it can actually have a negative effect, loss of appetite. It can actually cause a buildup of calcium. So we want to be really careful with that. You know, it can impact the organs as well. So if you're going to take vitamin D, just take the recommended dosage, 2000 IUs a day, get your blood work done. And then if you are deficient, then we can recommend a dosage that makes more sense.
Like how much vitamin D does your body produce whenever it gets enough sun? So say you're in the sun for an hour.
Well, it has to be direct sunlight, no sunscreen, ideally bare chested, right? Because if you're covered up with clothing, you're not going to be able to synthesize that vitamin D. So essentially what happens is when you absorb the rays from the sun, your body actually synthesizes the vitamin D from that. You're not getting it from the sun necessarily, you're synthesizing it in the body from the sun. We even if you live near the equator, again, unless you're outside, middle of the day, bare chested, skin color makes a difference. The more melanin, the more darker your skin is, the harder of a time you're actually going to have synthesizing vitamin D from the sun.
Okay, interesting. Right?
75% of the population is deficient, including tactical athletes. If you live somewhere where you're not getting a lot of direct sunlight, i.e. the Pacific Northwest, you're probably going to have to supplement.
Smart.
Yeah. But absolutely plays a role in the immune system.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, that answers all my questions.
Well, we're, this has been great. I know that I would love to talk about some more topics with you at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
I know that we had talked about, you know, really talking more about leadership and kind of mindset and attitude. And again, I think that could just be a whole other episode on its own. So I'd really love to invite you back.
I'd love to be back. I'd like to invite you on mine too. My tactical fitness report. We'll talk tactical fitness and nutrition, and you know, everybody needs to hear this. So
yeah. And let me tell you, I am a huge fan of Nick Barringer. Nick Barringer is amazing. So I'm gonna give you a plug. I'm gonna give you and him a plug. If you guys haven't listened to both episodes with Lieutenant Colonel Nick Barringer, you need to go listen to him. He's fantastic. He's actually, I consider him a mentor.
Absolutely.
He's terrific. So make sure you guys go listen to those. But let's do it again sometime.
I'd love to.
All right. Awesome, Stu. Thanks for being on. I'm going to let you get on with your day and rest your voice, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Great. Awesome.